Are those cellos? They seem like ticked off cellos. Are they happy? You think we're think they're happy, Liz? Okay, little AC/DC cover using cellos. Liz Hill, our wonderful engineer, also our musical coordinator. Yes,
maybe.
Yes,
but
so,
are the cellists wearing their English schoolboy outfits and, like Angus? Or?
You know, I don't know. It's two cellos from Celloverse is the name of the album, so that's cool. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. It is the 26th of June, and we are thrilled to have you here. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we will get started. We have a lot to discuss, as we always seem to. And we'll get going. So let me begin. It's Monday, so Teresa Bourgeois is here. She's a communications consultant. She joins us on Mondays, and we are thrilled to have her many times during the week. But we'll start off this week in a wonderful fashion. Good morning.
Thrilled to be here. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you.
Busy Monday.
Well, look what the cat dragged in.
How
we
about
are
this?
Rich Honan, who's been traveling. He was in Israel. He has been out. You have a lovely tan, so I assume you were somewhere south as well.
Yes, lots of warm places.
Good,
Greece.
Good for you.
Silicon Valley, everywhere.
All right, so you're back, and we could not be more thrilled to have you here.
Not only that, maybe the letters will stop now.
Did you kill Rich?
What did you do to Rich? Rosemary was the number one. We used to get them all the time. She would travel, and she wouldn't tell us. And then people would write and say, "What did you, male chauvinist pig people, do to our Rosemary?"
I was listening, and I didn't get a full discussion because Rich wasn't there. So Rich is here today.
We are
very, very happy to have Rich with us. And, Alan Chartok, of course.
And we have big news.
Yes, we do. It's very cool news. So go ahead.
Well, let me try to set it up. As you all know, in each of the fund, the federal government took about $400,000, is set to take $400,000 away from WMC. They threatened, and a lot of you wrote and said, "Oh no, they'll never do it." Well, they're doing it. It's in the budget. They're trying to take it away. And we said that what we would do is we would come to you, and we get a third of that in every fund drive. Now, the last fund drive, we were actually had a few days before the fund drive began, and we had filled up the lockbox, and we did it that way. But this time, we're back here today, and Joe, you'll point out what people get.
So this is the, just for those of you keeping score at home, and for those of you who have a copy of the federal budget on your nightstand, the Trump administration has zeroed out money for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The money we get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is
about $400,000.
So what we did is we said it was $133,000 each drive, and so we did it for the February drive
in record time.
And now in July we are looking halfway through the year, and by the way, we're going to do it again at the end of the year, so don't scream about it, because we're going to do that as well, because we need to make up that money.
All right. We've always counted on the fact that you'll be there for us to do this.
So to help us, we have our friends from the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. As you know, and Liz Sobel will join us at 11:30 this morning, the CEO and president of the Saratoga Performing Arts Center.
Whoa.
She will be here this morning because they're talking about the New York. They had a great weekend this past weekend with the Saratoga Fryhoffers Jazz Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York City Ballet is coming July 5th through the 15th. And, of course, the Philadelphia Orchestra the 4th through the 18th of August. And they said, "All right, we want to help you on this." So you get a pair of undated lawn tickets, 2-SPAC, for either the ballet or for the orchestra. And it's $100, and you can help the lockbox fill the it's not a lockbox, it's a First Amendment fund.
Right.
Fill the First Amendment fund, and you get the tickets.
Or
anything else that's on the drop-down
or
menu.
Or anything else you want.
Yeah, on the drop-down menu. So the easiest way to do it is just go to WAMC.org, and you will see right on the front that there is a Help the First Amendment Fund. You press on that, and it'll just walk you through the process. That's the easiest way to do it. If nothing about going to a computer is easy for you, then you can call 1-800- 323-9262, and one of our wonderful volunteers or staff members will walk you through the process.
That number again is 1-800-323-9262. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alan, and I want to tell you there's only one reason to do this. It's a great opportunity to stick it in the eye of people who call the press the enemy of the people and who say, okay, the first thing we're going to do, and I believe that's what Bannon said, the first thing we have to do is zero out the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So here you go.
I would just like two things on the record, if I may.
Of course you may.
One thing on the record is that this is what we always said we were going to do. This isn't like an additional thing.
No.
In addition to, we always said we were going to do this. By the way, and the other thing that I think you should know is that since 2002, this station, thanks to Alan, has had a First Amendment fund for exactly this reason, because we were worried then.
Here we were.
That the money was going to be taken away. So talk a little bit about, because the First Amendment fund was set up over 15 years ago to counter concerns about the money going away, and it's not just for that. It's also to help us.
And who would have predicted a president who talks fake news and denigrates?
And by the way, it is directed by our board of trustees.
Yes.
In other words, I can't say go spend that. That money is there. They're the ones who have to make decisions about how that money is going to be spent, if there is anything. But I have to say, folks. There is only one reason to do this, and that is that we're all in this together. And, you know, there are many people who believe, right, Joe, that many people who believe that the public should not come out of the public purse. That, look, I get letters about this all the time. Why do you people think that you should get money? Well, the answer is from the budget. The answer is, if you really believe that, this is the time to put your own money in.
1-800-323-9262. You can also go online, wamc.org. We're going to take a break, give you a few seconds to go and help fill the lockbox or the First Amendment fund.
Yeah, whatever.
Or the First Amendment fund lockbox.
Tickets to the ballet.
Yes, you get thank you, Teresa. You get undated line tickets for the for SPAC, the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, for the ballet or the orchestra. There are some blackout dates, but you'll see that.
How much?
$100. And you
Whoa.
Get a pair, an iPad, right?
Wow. No,
but there's only really, I keep coming back, there's only one reason, because you love the station and because people stop me in the street all the time now and say, you're my go-to in the morning because it's the one place I get some sanity.
And Rich Honan's back.
And Rich Honan.
And
Rich
that's worth it.
In honor of Rich
honor
Honan,
of
for God's sake.
Yeah,
if you're a conservative, this is a good time to do it.
We're going to take a break. We'll get some underwriting. We'll hear some more angry cello music, and then we'll be back for a conversation. We'll be back right after this. That's happier. That's good. Yeah, happy cello.
What song was that, though?
What was?
Originally, it was Wake Me Up by Avicii.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wake Me Up.
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, Wake Me Up.
Good morning. Good morning.
Actually, when they take a song and when they put it to cello, it's sometimes it's hard to pick it up.
It's very like cool.
That was good.
Pitbull
I like that.
I wonder if it was Yehuda Hanani.
I had too much coffee. Or
good morning. Welcome back. We are here. We have a lot to talk about. So I wasn't here Friday. I missed the conversation in regards to health care. But we're going to talk about it again because over the weekend there has been the Republican support for the bill has slipped quite a bit. More Republican senators saying they have grave concerns about the legislation, and Senate leaders now trying to appease those members as that support of the health bill continues to slip. Alan.
So now I have a theory about all of this. I think they have the votes. I think they're going to have the votes to do what they want to do. And I think this is all a bunch of
malarkey,
something out of a bull.
Okay.
And in fact, what they're trying to do now is give cover to everybody they can. And you really see how phony the whole thing is. So Susan Collins, who everybody assumes, Senator Collins from Maine, was going to be a strong no vote, is really equivocating. The guy from Nevada, who is in real danger here, of it was a Hillary Heller. State. What's the name again?
Dean Heller.
Heller. Yeah, it's a name I have. The whole thing there is that they're threatening him with a primary.
They did a $1 million ad buy against him this weekend.
So, you know,
the pressure is on.
The pressure is on. If you fool with us, we'll kill your political aspirations. So
their own guy, a $1 million ad buy.
So I
and
think
then went after him on social media.
So
orchestrated.
So I think there's a very good chance that they have the votes already, that this is all a bunch of malarkey, as Joe says, that they're positioning themselves to say how hard they're working on it.
But wouldn't I understand the buy, you know, the ad buy and all of that stuff. Yeah. But still, if you're voting on your principles and you're saying I don't feel that this is the best for my constituents, there's a possibility this could all backfire on the Senate leadership, right? And that they actually, that the constituents support this guy.
That's a possibility. But there's another possibility here, and that is that this is so screwed up because people like health care. They need health care. People are buying ads on the television, which are excellent, showing somebody in a nursing home. You know, the possibility is that if Medicaid goes out the window, so does, I think, two-thirds of the people who are in nursing homes now are paid for by Medicaid and have nobody else to rely on. This could be tragic. You have an ad on TV now about a kid who needs an inhaler because his asthma is acting up, and the mother comes running in, and the TV says she doesn't know whether to buy the meds for the kid or to pay her mortgage. This is effective stuff. Rich, you're shaking your head. You think you have a problem with this?
I'm glad to see there's no hyperbole in any of the ads. But I do actually agree. I'm going to defer to Teresa because I think she understands the legislative process certainly better than I do. I'm not as sanguine as Alan is that they have the votes. But I do buy a lot of what Alan says, that this is the time for positioning, whether it's time for cover or whether it's time for people to pretend to be on the fence so they can get some, you know, get some benefits from Mitch McConnell. Do you see any part of that, Teresa?
Right. I think what the bill that Mitch McConnell put out, who's the leader, the Republican leader in the Senate, the bill that he released late last week was, as he described it, a draft. And I think that he set it up so that a number of Republican senators, particularly those who are in districts, up for a re-election this year, can then offer amendments. And so they can then say, I improve the bill.
And take legal bribes. Your state will get all this extra money if you just
Alaska.
Do what we tell you.
Well, for instance, there's a special cutout provision for four rural states, including Alaska, so that their Medicaid cuts won't be as deep. That's Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, definitely on the fence. So there'll be an amendment that she can offer. He's given her this cutout. So there are a whole set of procedural things that he's done so that they can have a series of votes this week so that they can say, well, I got my amendment in.
Sure.
It's not unlike Congressman Faso with his amendment to change the state-county mechanism for Medicaid. So he's not talking about the overall bill. He's just talking about how my amendment got passed. And
right.
Aren't I great for doing that? So we shall see if it works. But the other thing I think that they've set up is that if he doesn't have the votes, unlike on the House side, he's not going to force a vote on the bill. It will go down on what's called, and now this is really arcane, but there's something called the motion to proceed.
That's
so
right.
Before they start voting on the bill, the first thing they'll do is vote on the motion to proceed. And if he doesn't think he has the votes, if all of this kabuki is not working, then they'll just vote no on the motion to proceed. And so the Republicans then will never be held accountable for to vote up or down on the bill.
But Teresa, don't you think
is that way too?
No.
And by the way, I know you guys are laughing. Kabuki is a very inside the beltway term.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Whenever you have a Washington meeting, you know, people say, "Well, let's talk about the Kabuki beforehand."
Yeah. So, but that's. I mean, I think Ron Johnson, who's from Wisconsin, the Republican, he was all over the media this weekend saying he's not ready to support it.
Not ready.
Ready is the key word. He's recommending that they vote no on the motion to proceed, and then they give them time to move ahead, and then which
they will do, just as they did with the House of Representatives. It goes down, then they come back. Now we have the votes to do this. We've bribed enough people. We can make it happen.
Well, but Teresa, you're saying it goes the other way. I'm sorry.
No, we're just going to pause right there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Teresa Bourgeois. We are thrilled to have the panel before us and for your letters. Panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. What is in the mailbag, Alan?
All right, Joe. Vice News did an interesting piece on his plans, I take that, Trump, to defund public radio a few weeks back. Sum it up, rural areas in the reddest of the red districts rely upon public radio on topics that are related to farming, fishing, and game. So much so, politicians in conservative districts will never vote for the budget if that's in there. That said, people should donate to WAMC. Peace out, Playas. It's Playas Beach, Playas. 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 Okay. Brian from Gilliland.
Thank
you, Brian.
I think he's saying peace out, Playas.
That was very
reasonable. Oh, I see.
There's a comma there.
Okay. I gotcha.
And Jeff says, Rich is back and making one of his rare appearances. So why do you spend the whole first part of the show shilling for donations? You don't do this on other days. Is it that you don't want a reasonable person to throw cold water on everyone else's liberal rants? Very disappointing. So the fact that we are raising money to keep this radio station alive is all because we want to shut Rich up, which, by the way, is why we invited him here.
Thank you for your letter, though. That's interesting.
Thank you for your letter, though.
I want the really progressive liberal other members of the panel to say, oh, yes, they never fund drive when I'm here.
Without,
go ahead.
That is definitely
And Jim
kabuki.
Says, without public radio supported in part by CPB, the only media outlets are the commercial stations that, like it or not, temper their news contents to not put major sponsors in a bad light. Government-supported broadcasting has the best chance of not being beholden to anyone, letting them tell it like it is. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that very much. You're a reasonable and good man. And Mary says... So do I understand correctly that 20 minutes of each show will be dedicated to fundraising? WNC comes through clearly on my computer. Lucky you.
WNYC, right?
WNYC, yeah. And I can get a WSHU in my car. The last fundraiser was too long. It went on for weeks and weeks.
I believe it was 18 hours.
Princess Bride, 19 hours. Let's get it right.
Okay, sorry, 19
Much
hours.
Much more than the dedicated days. If I wanted to listen to so many commercials, I would listen to a commercial station. That's Mary. The Princess Bride, what is it in The Princess Bride? Thank you for your letter, did you say?
Thank you for your letter, Mary.
Yeah,
wait,
Mary.
What's the Princess Bride reference?
Liar! Okay, and then Mike says, I believe 21CD Representative Elise Stefanik understands that her vote in support of Trump Care and its easing out of Medicaid funds, I think she realizes the negative effect this will have on rural hospitals in her district. In one of her last newsletters, she said she is introducing a bill to support rural hospitals. I think this is Stefanik's realization that a vote will have a negative impact on those hospitals. Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is she realizes that she made a mistake.
How do you?
I'm sorry, she already voted for it.
No, she voted for it, and
yes,
there's been
did.
A severe reaction to it, and now this is a little makeup.
But how do you support rural hospitals With Medicaid cut.
You don't. You can't make up the difference.
You reallocate funds. You reallocate funds through HHS, which I think is what, if Price was here, that's what he would probably say they were doing.
Bill in that won't pass.
They just reallocate funds from existing large-scale hospitals. I'm guessing that's what their answer would be.
So I guess one way to do it, if this is what you're saying, Rich, I don't understand the intricacies of this as much as you probably do.
It was a very difficult amendment to read, I have to tell you, right? I mean, I tried reading my way, and I try never to be on when I haven't read line by line everything we're talking about. I don't know. I know it's only 130 pages. It was very difficult to get through that. Okay, so I'm not in any way professing to be an expert on the Senate proposed amendment.
Well, it wasn't having to do with the proposed bill. It has to do with what happens with rural hospitals, because what happened before is that people walked through the doors and they didn't have insurance. And so the hospitals had to be reimbursed through what they call free care pool money. And so, but the question is there enough, could they put together enough free care pool money to make up the difference when people don't have Medicaid insurance? And the reason they wanted to expand Medicaid is because the most expensive way to solve this problem is to have people without insurance walk into an emergency room to get their basic care that they otherwise could get at a local clinic their primary care doctor.
The second most expensive way is to have people under Obamacare walking into emergency rooms, which Obamacare was supposed to prevent. But I just spent some time out in the Silicon Valley area, and I would tell you to read what's going on in Sonoma County, read what's going on with Cali Health or Health Cali, whatever they call it, where now they're having terrible problems with people overflowing emergency rooms and not being and it really straining the system, both from a care standpoint and more importantly maybe from a dollar standpoint,
which is why we ought to have universal health care, and that would solve a great deal of what our problems are.
But
right now
the data one of the data points about the Obamacare is that it dramatically reduced the number of people going through emergency rooms who wasn't the proper place to get their care, and that's why the rate of increase in healthcare was going down. They bend the curve, lower the rate of increase, because more people were going to these urgent care and to the primary care doctors, more people getting preventive care, and it really was effectively moving people away from emergency rooms. And by all predictions, if this Trump care bill passes, people will be without care, and then their only option will be to go through the emergency room, which is the most expensive way to do it.
And I think what we're learning, Teresa, is like so many things about Obamacare, what you just described was not so much a data point as a narrative.
No. I'm saying outcome.
Read the papers today. Read what's going on in California. And there were stories as early as 2014 and 2015, and people were puzzled. So why are we getting more people in emergency rooms? It wasn't supposed to happen, and it's happening now. I think that the reality is starting to come out, and I think that's one of the things that's disturbing the Obamacare narrative. I just don't understand, by the way, how on the conservative side, I don't know how guys like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul come back and can really face their conservative constituents by saying, hey, I did everything I could to stop this. And everybody looks at them and says, okay, so now we still have Obamacare. And how are you guys going to pay for that? And what are you going to do with everybody being out of the exchanges? I think they're being obstructionist in a way that doesn't get any side anywhere.
What do you think about the actual bill? Do you think it'll solve anything?
Again, no. I think it'll ameliorate some of the problems, and I think it'll exacerbate other of the problems, because at the end of the day, it's a tax bill like the original Obamacare was a tax bill, and any tax bill will benefit some people and hurt others. It's axiomatic. It's a tax bill.
Well, there are a couple of things. You guys are really good at the internals here, and I much appreciate what
you've had. Nice use of axiomatic, by the way.
What you've had to say.
I'm looking it up.
But,
what the heck does that mean?
But I have to say, how could any human being in his 70s, turn around and say to little kids and to parents and to all kinds of people who desperately need this health care. I'm much more interested in what could be in that, okay, dare I say it, ogre's mind when he takes this stuff away from the American people. I don't get it. I think that's the point we really have to look at here. And I just don't understand it. I don't understand a man. Well,
I think, Alan, that same that ogre might say to that guy in the 70s that your Obamacare is covering your prenatal counseling, and maybe that's not really where we need to be spending our money.
Why not?
Well, good luck to you. But if it's covering things like pregnancy care for 70-year-old men, I think we're seeing a misallocation of resources.
I'm having real trouble following
because of the amount of requirements that were put upon the Obamacare plans, as we all know, were not necessarily what everybody would have picked if they were picking their own kind of bare bones, maybe catastrophic care health care plan, which is one of the reasons why that it is out of money. The other reason it's out of money is structural.
You have a daughter, right? You have a daughter,
and for her, and yes, and my daughter should have a plan that includes that, but I shouldn't. And frankly, probably you shouldn't.
Well, then, good. So if you don't have kids who are in school,
I'm not casting aspersions at your vigor.
Not at all. But I want to know. but if your grandchildren, right?
Yes.
They're gonna go to elementary school. But you don't have right now. You don't have any kids who are going to elementary school. So why should you pay for that?
Because
so,
it's part so that the, that
you're an American.
Self-interest or community? You know, the question is it all about self-interest? I mean, this really is the fundamental question. Is it all about self-interest, or is there something that we do that we say collectively, this is the base of how we all should live as a country, and that we're willing through our tax dollars to support some basic things? You know, we're willing to support
funding for education
and health.
Like, I don't have kids, but I still pay my taxes for education because I believe, you know, and I don't resent that, because I think as a country, it's important that we have an educated country, because that may not directly benefit me.
We've got a letter here saying the stupider that people get, the more they have their way with them.
Well, but overall, it benefits me. So I've been thinking about this weekend. You know, what is the fundamental choice here is you have a finite pool of dollars, and how do you spend those dollars? And what are we as a country? And it gets to, you know, Senator Kennedy used to always say, is it a privilege or a right? And the Republican bill says healthcare is a privilege, not a right. And the Democratic approach, for the most part, has been healthcare is a right. That we have, just like we say we want to have an educated society, it says we want to have basic health care. And so then you do share the expenses. So then part of your health care dollars goes to these 10 essential benefits. And you may not use all those 10 essential benefits, but you believe that everybody should have them as a base part of your healthcare coverage.
And I think the conservatives would agree with that. I think they'd also point out
they don't agree with the 10 essential benefits.
Well, we agree with the 10 essential benefits, but should be somewhat tailored to the people who will need them.
Well, that's not and, that's saying that.
And now, well, no, and now you're saying, because now you're getting away from. I was with you right up when you said basic healthcare. And we could argue about what basic is, and we'd probably disagree, but I bet we'd come probably closer than you think. But both the product that was being delivered was too expensive, meaning the Obamacare plans. The delivery method, I don't think anybody could argue that the exchanges were the highest and best way to go about this. And the funding mechanism was structurally meant to stop basically when Obama went out of office, right? They're not the subsidies you have to be, right? The subsidies are not there the way they were 2 years ago, Teresa. Right?
Because of Trump.
Because
it is because of Trump.
That's how the bill was written. The subsidies were written to phase out. That's in the bill. That's why we're having the problems now.
No. He what Trump did administratively is stop the subsidies, which is why the system is collapsing right now. He's collapsing the system and okay, this is way down in the weeds for listeners. I'm sorry, but he is stopping the payments of the subsidies several years earlier than they were supposed to be. There's supposed to be this transition funding. There was a 10 to 15 year transition funding to help as you right. change the way the system worked. That was programmed into the bill. Not when he left, that they determined that it would take about 10 years to alter how the health system works so that there needed to be subsidies. And what Trump did when he came in is that he stopped the subsidies. And so if you looked at the insurers and what they said, they had until last week to be told whether or not they were going to get the subsidies. But he's created so much uncertainty in the markets and not given them answers on the time that they needed them. So they're getting out, or they're raising premiums because Trump has created so much uncertainty in the market. You can't blame that on Barack Obama. You cannot blame that on Barack Obama. Well, you can, but you're wrong.
Well, no, you're wrong because, again, you do a good job of telling us the Democratic narrative, but you do a bad job of sticking to the facts. How many insurers left the market in 2016? A lot. The markets were already collapsing in 2016, and up until like November 8th, everybody thought Hillary was going to be president. All right, so everybody thought Obamacare was going to continue. So are you telling me that the market wasn't already collapsing? And then, if you really thought the subsidies were important, why were they left to further legislation and review rather than being part of the bill? The subsidies, by a huge percentage, got done by this year, by 2016, 2017.
Okay, so what I want to know, and we have a lot of letters on this, by the way.
I have to take a break, too.
Okay, well, let me read one. Hey, Rich.
Hey.
I'll make a deal with you. You cover my pregnancy, and I will cover your prostate cancer. I love this one. That's what insurance is all
Viagra,
about.
And Viagra, by the way.
What'd you say?
And Viagra and all this other stuff.
Yeah, things like that. That's right. But Rich, here's the point,
here,
Rich. The Democrats have
won. That wasn't directed personally.
Okay. The Democrats have won.
I'll avoid the obvious that if you don't cover the Viagra, then you don't have to cover the pregnancy.
Sorry.
That's so clever of you. That's a political way of doing it. You say, I'll avoid the obvious and not say what I'm about to say.
First of all, already covering. I'm already paying into health care. I'm already paying, besides the fact that I'm paying huge taxes, I'm also paying way more for my health care than I and my family use because for years, as we know, we've been subsidizing uninsured and lower insured people. And by the way, fine with that. Fine with it. Have always been fine with that. I probably am covering this individual's health in some point, which I'm fine with because that's how we do it.
Somebody get me the smallest violin they can find so I can play My Heart Bleeds Blue Borscht for you, Rich.
All right. So we'll go look for the small violin. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with more. This is a very lovely, spirited conversation. I like it. No, I think we're exactly on the rails. We're talking about what matters. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Teresa Bourgeois. A spirited discussion this morning, which is a lot of fun to watch, by the way. It's a lot of fun to listen to as well. We have letters. We'll get we'll hear what people is on people's minds. They seem to be taking our discussion very well.
You want the letters now? Okay. Teresa said that Senator McConnell will be able to provide cover for those up for re-election 2018. Actually, the only Republican up in the next cycle who isn't from a profoundly red state is Jeff Flake of Arizona. The other public waivers mostly face the electorate in 2020. It's one big reason why many of the nasty bits of the bill are postponed until after that election.
Well, it's true that they built it in so the changes wouldn't come until after the next election, but certainly people like Senator Dean Heller of Nevada is up for election, and he's in a very close election, and that's...
Well, that's the one she was giving you.
But
there are five others.
Yes, the Republicans did that. I think, everybody does that, right? Doesn't everybody doesn't everybody put off a lot of the funding until they're out of office?
No matter
what bill we're talking about.
But one of the things they did more importantly
Andrew
than
Cuomo
they put
does.
It off past election is that they did, and it'll be into today, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office score comes out, allegedly. And one of the things that they did in this bill that they didn't do in the House bill is they moved the Medicaid cuts past the 10-year window.
Right.
So that because then that wouldn't be in the CBO score.
It's still 10 years, but the 10-year window starts further down the road.
Right. And so they designed it so it would be, so a portion of the Medicaid cuts are greater at the end.
Right.
And so the speculation is they did that so that the CBO score wouldn't be as bad.
Okay, now up back to the back to the letters. Hey, panel, it's called public health, Rich. Why should you have to pay a portion of health care for women? Because healthy women are essential for a healthy economy. Let's face it, that's the only argument a Republican will hear.
I agree. I said before, I'm happy to pay other people's health. I'm happy to pay taxes to support other people. And by the way, part of the conservative, and Teresa was talking about self-interest, you know, okay, so I'll acknowledge that it is in my self-interest to have, you know, a healthy and well-educated country, of course. Okay, so I'm not doing it out of the goodness of my heart. I'm doing it because I want to have a better country. I'm fine. Same reason that people will pay school taxes even when their kids are out of school. Part of it is, yeah, we want everybody to have good schools. Part of it is, it also means my neighborhood is, you know, I live
you
in a neighborhood
that's good.
You have
an educated workforce.
Well, and you live in a good school system, and so it improves the property value of your house.
You just got back from Israel, right?
Yeah.
They have a national health care there?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so it's a country you can admire and think.
Yeah,
well
and like Canada, it takes 46 weeks to get brain surgery there because that's what national health care does.
Not
so if
to
you
everybody.
Have to have brain surgery, God forbid, and you're in Canada,
go
maybe
to Guatemala.
Sometime next year, maybe you'll get your surgery.
Hello, panel. Rich said that the bill would help some problems and not help others. I'm wondering, what would the bill actually help as opposed to the ACA?
Yeah, what do you think the Trump Care, the McConnell bill, what do you think that the benefits of that are?
I think the only benefits are is that it reduces some of the tax burden and hopefully and
so what's the trade-off of reducing the tax burden?
Well,
cost?
It provides more money not only for healthcare but for other things. What's the
cost of that? So you reduce the tax burden.
That's by $800 billion.
Right, and probably over $1 trillion when you're done. And so then what do you lose? What's the trade-off?
Well, the trade-off is that people have to contribute more to their own health care, and for the people who can't contribute, what it means is you're not going to get as robust a plan. Now the free market capital. Well, so that's the trade-off.
So let me say. So the analysis is you got to reach the $800 billion, you have to cut 25% out of Medicaid. So that means either 25% of the people don't get covered, or you have
get kicked out of nursing homes.
Or 25% or everybody gets 25% less coverage. So in the real world, so everybody says, this is Passo's argument, Stefanik's argument. The Cruz, we've got to contain the cost. The country can't afford it. We've got to contain the cost of Medicaid. Okay, so you say that's what you're just saying. $800 billion. We need that savings so we can have tax breaks. So what's the trade-off? So where are you going to cut $800 billion out of Medicaid?
Where. So what they've done is they've changed the structure from targeted grants to block grants, so that, for example, now
per capita caps.
Yeah, but also block grants, making it block grants state by state.
So then, how do you do that? What does that mean for
and
the?
What do you do with a state that is just
they're not the problem.
So do you cut the nursing home?
It's not Louisiana. No,
so do you cut the disability
is,
coverage? Do you cut the nursing home coverage? Do you cut the? What do you cut?
I go to Governor Cuomo and I go to Governor Brown and I say, listen, you guys now have a set amount of money to spend on your state. Do you guys want to have the Cadillac of health care plans that the public pays for, or do you want to pare it down?
But where would
and,
you
and live
where would
within
you cut
means?
That 25% in Medicaid? You
live between
cut.
Your but living within your means means somebody's going to get it.
So
get
do you
the
cut
share.
The nursing home coverage? Do you cut the disability coverage?
I would cut things. First of all, I would cut things. Understand one thing. I would.
What do you cut?
This is
what Republicans will never answer.
No,
what will you
and
cut?
And here's why the Republicans won't. Because the Republicans are stuck fixing a plan that they would not have proposed.
Thank
that
you,
was,
Kellyanne Conway,
that
for
was
the
irresponsibly,
filibuster.
Rich white men.
Rich.
That was irresponsibly put out.
What
that,
would
that
you
was,
cut?
That was procured by fraud and artifice by Obama.
What would you cut,
and
Chris?
What I would cut would be, again, that Cadillac of benefits, and ask any healthcare professional what New
Your
York State provides.
Your options for Medicaid are you cut nursing home coverage.
No,
you cut disability coverage, or you cut the Medicaid expansion for the working poor.
That's the narrative again.
That's what Medicaid covers.
All right, one at a time.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's the narrative. Okay, you're not even talking about service delivery. Okay, which we will improve vastly by having healthcare be able to go more nationally than through the exchanges, all of which are falling apart and which none of you have an answer to.
I do. Medicare for all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know.
Keep expanding Medicaid.
Yeah, welcome
Where's
to the Soviet Union.
Where's your 25% cut in Medicaid?
And the free market capitalists, would say that with that $800 billion tax cut, we will actually, at the end of the day, have more tax revenue because we're driving a better economy.
And old people will pay more. And
you know what? It might be that people will not pay the same for all of their health care.
Okay,
they may be different levels of health care.
This is the question Republicans won't answer.
Because
where's
you
your 25% cut in Medicaid?
I don't know that it's going to be a 25% cut at the end of the 10 years because I think, like many free market capitalists, I believe that when you cut taxes, take money away from the government, you actually stimulate the economy and create greater revenue enhancement than
so
what you
had
before.
So you think we're going to get 3% growth that the Trump team is predicting?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All anyway. Right. This pains me to say, but we have to take a break
and
pause this for a moment. But that was really good, you two.
But he didn't answer the question. The Republicans never answered the question.
All right.
Where are the cuts?
We're going to go on a break for like 5 minutes. He'll come up with an answer. Don't you worry. He'll think of
come
something.
Come up with a question based on facts, and I'll answer the question.
We'll be right back. after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Teresa Bourgeois.
We all made up during the break.
Yeah, that was
nice
good.
Friends.
Well,
I didn't think we had anything to make up about.
It was a spirited discussion. That was fine. That's what we want.
But the Republicans still didn't answer the question. Okay, letting it go.
All right, so let's just we have a ton of letters, but I want to get to the Russia, the latest in Russia here, and then we'll go to the letters as we finish up our time together. All right, so the strategy now seems to be given. There was a big Washington Post story on Friday. Having to do with what the Obama administration knew about the Russian situation and what they did around the election. Now, the White House is blaming the Obama administration for failing to tackle possible Russian collusion in the 2016 presidential election, sticking with a new strategy to fault President Trump's predecessor for an issue currently facing the president himself as part of a widening FBI probe. Appearing on ABC's This Week on Sunday morning, Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president, struck a combative tone, saying it's the Obama administration that was responsible for doing absolutely nothing from August to January with the knowledge that Russia was hacking into our election.
Well, apparently that was a lie. Because the Obama administration was doing a great deal. They were getting in touch with the Russians. They were saying, cut it out. They were whatever. But the point is, Trump is now trying to deflect by saying that, you know, they didn't do enough for the Russians. Now, he had that information because Obama gave him that information, sat down with him in the White House and told him the information. And all along, this guy, Trump, has been saying that he was not, that there was no Russian interaction. Now he's changed it to say, yes, there was, but the Obama people didn't do enough. This is typical of his terrible lies.
What did the Obama administration do?
Well, we don't know fully, but we do know they were in touch with him. And we do know that they told that the president told the Russians, cut it out. And we do know that they took some steps in which they were putting some sanctions on Russia for what they were doing. We know all of that. So what do you mean they didn't do anything?
Well, I think it's more likely that they looked at it and they said, look, we now find out, which and this, by the way, dovetails with the New York Times kind of bombshell from when they talked about this last year or maybe it was earlier this year. you know, we now, the whole idea that the CIA said, well, we think it was more, we think they were more in favor of the Republicans because they released more bad stuff on the Democrats. And it looks like kind of nobody believed that. NSA doesn't seem to have believed it. FBI doesn't seem to have necessarily agreed with that. And we find out that it's because, we now know it's because the Democrats were advised of a hack at the Democratic National Committee and then did nothing about it, even though the FBI tried to get them to do something. But I think in real life, I think the Obama.
I don't know that.
I'm sorry.
It was reported in the New York Times.
What?
Okay.
Wait. That's not right.
Rich, yeah. Please.
New York. Okay, guys. Go back to the Washington Post story. It harkens back to the New York Times story. The New York Times story, which was the, it was, Joe, when did this come out? It was the big Sunday Times story. It was some months ago. And when they, it was.
Why are you buying this narrative? Why are you taking this?
We talked about it on the air.
Yeah, but why are you buying this nonsense? Trump is the president, like it or not, right now, and he has to be dealing with them. And first he denies that the Russians did anything bad. He stood up there and talked about how great Putin was in the beginning. He then talked about his friends in Russia. What are you talking about? Why are you buying this garbage?
Rich,
why are you buying this garbage?
Rich, let's take partisanship out of it. Okay, let's just say
that's impossible. Let's try and tamp it down as much as we can, but that's impossible.
Let's just step back and look at the big picture.
Okay,
if there are things that can we agree on? Can we agree that it's true that the Russians try to interfere with the U.S. elections in the 2016 election
yes
cycle?
Yes or no, Rich?
I'm not saying
with the Republicans or Democrats, more or less
yes
on the other side,
no,
but
Rich.
in general, let's say maybe it was bipartisan, did they try to interfere with the 2016 elections?
I'm saying, to me, I think we can agree that the Russians certainly tried to infiltrate, do cyber espionage against us. Whether it sounds like what they did was they sent a bunch of emails that to try and get people to click on them, and that would then give them access to certain.
What,
okay. Was that
to what end?
Based on what I understand, that they tried to interfere in three different ways, and the intelligence agencies agree on this. That they tried to hack into computer databases,
right,
certainly at the DNC, perhaps at the RNC, and at other places. That they, the second is that they put out a lot of fake news to try to change the conversation. There's no doubt about that. And third, that came out last week with the testimony by Jay Johnson, former Homeland Security Director, is that they successfully hacked into the databases in 21 states. So the voting records in 21 states. And so those are the three areas which there seems to be little doubt that they did. And so according to this amazing Washington Post piece that came out on Friday, when the Democrats and the Obama administration, began to realize this, because the security agencies were coming, intelligence agencies were coming in warning starting in July, then they immediately took action, including Trump and high-level officials contacting their counterparts. President Obama,
right,
and Obama officials contacting their counterparts in Russia and saying, you have to stop this. And then took the highly irregular step of having the 17 agencies put out a notice, a report in early October, right? Those letters.
Right.
So how can you? How can Trump legitimately say nothing? They never said anything about it.
No. Okay. Wait. John writes to us. Obama and Russia. As reported by the Post and Times previously, Obama went to McConnell and Ryan with the info and suggested a bipartisan response, which they rejected and threatened to characterize an Obama announcement alone as political.
And Reid got so upset by that, the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, he got so upset by that and was so worried that he then went back and said stuff publicly, which he was condemned for doing. But a lot of this they couldn't talk about because it was classified. But so for Kellyanne Conway, and now the President Trump has a tweet storm today about this, to say we never knew and they did nothing is just, it's a lie. It's a lie.
Point. So your point was, so if I'm accepting your points, you're saying, look, we now, your points are that, one, there was Russian hacking or attempted hacking, and I'm using that term kind of generically, right?
The Russian intrusion into our 2016 election.
And that happened in 2016 while Obama was president. What does that have to do with Trump?
Okay, two things. I just have two questions for you. One, if President Obama came out 4, 6, 8 weeks before the election and said we're greatly concerned and did something, wouldn't the other side have said you're interfering with the election?
Of course.
Okay.
They would have gone crazy like they did with Reid's letter.
Right.
Of course.
Okay. Two, how does that then, what we are talking about, doesn't that fit into the narrative of all of this other Russian
intrusion?
And I was going to say collusion, but all that other Russian discussion between members of the Trump administration and the Trump advance team going back into June of 2016.
None of which has necessarily been denied, and none of which is illegal. No part of which has yet been charged on anything.
Okay, but
and
you don't think that looks strange?
What I think looks strange is if the Obama administration really thought there was something going on with the election, they would have taken action.
They did take action.
Fine. What's the matter with you?
And then everybody came out and said, and nothing happened with the election. There was no changing of votes.
But the problem,
they only became interested after Hillary lost.
Wait a second. How do you know there was no changing of votes? What about the DNC and what about all that stuff that they were releasing? Come on, Rich.
And we don't.
Because every intelligence agency from Jay Johnson on down has said there is no evidence that votes were changed. Right?
No, Jay Johnson said that it would take research to understand the fake news.
All right, here we go.
Rich, is that the Trump administration is not focused on this now. When in France, in the French elections, they understood that the Russians were trying to tamper with their elections.
They worked hard to stop it.
The Germans working hard to stop it.
They probably always are.
But I'm reading letters. Good morning, panel. Welcome back, Rich. Kellyanne Conway.
This is such a non-issue. I just want to go on record and say non-issue. You'll be sitting here a year from now. Nobody will have been indicted. Nobody will have been charged. We're going to be having the same conversation.
Oh, you're going to indict Kislyak? Come on.
He's going back home, you know.
Yes, I saw they pulled him back. Kellyanne Conway, you got to be kidding. And Alan is right. I like this letter. Trump knew because Obama told him, and he'd done nothing except to cozy up to primary lender. I like that a lot. Primary lender. Putin denying Russian hacking, attempting to lift sanctions, etc. Come on, Rich. Don't you have any self-respect? Bob and Milford.
This is such a made-up issue. It's just such a made-up issue.
So I don't know how you can say that. I don't know how you can say that, because when you look, and I know this is difficult, but I'm going to go with Teresa's tack because I think it's important.
Okay.
Bipartisan, whoever you are.
Go ahead.
The Russians interfering with an election process. You think that's a made up?
Russians trying to? Oh, do I think that they probably tried to interfere to make things to create difficulties? Sure. Okay.
You had a president who kept yelling that the election was rigged. And now we turn out that it may well have been rigged, but not the way he thought.
And you had a president who did very little about it. Or if I believe you and Teresa, then the president did everything he was supposed to do, and guess what? It was fine. There was no evidence of any tampering.
The question is, going forward, what are we doing as a country on this topic? I think that's the problem.
Well, I think
if the Trump administration won't admit that interference, Russian interference, even happened, then how are they marshaling the resources of the country?
On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday,
right.
It's a different answer.
And so what Kellyanne Conway said, what did she do this weekend? She said, well, we have this Voter Integrity Commission. Well, what's the Voter Integrity Commission? Is their charge, their focus is not on hacking. I'm sorry, I'm talking too much. It's not on hacking. It's on voter fraud, which there is almost no voter fraud in this country. There's a great look at the Brookings Institute. They did a great analysis of this that they put out on Friday on this commission that he set up that she points to as, well, that's their response. That's a paltry response.
Listen, I want to get to letters. But
okay.
Go
ahead.
All right.
Jeff says, how refreshing to have Rich talk about and reference facts. instead of the normal panel spending 90 minutes blaming everyone else based on opinion. Rich needs to be on the panel every day. Thanks from Jeff. Robert says, bravo.
We'll talk after the show, Rich.
Bravo. What I heard on the roundtable this morning hit the nail right on the head. Republicans believe that basic health care is a privilege. Democrats believe basic health care is a right similar to public education, where everyone pays school tax whether you have kids or not for the good of the country. That's why we should have universal basic health care, and the argument that we should be having is what is covered by basic health care and where do you draw the line to extreme measures of care and cost. Thank you, Bob of Rhinebeck. Hi, panel.
Listen, I agree with Bob.
Hi, panel. Love listening to my morning commute. I just wanted to correct Rich's timetable for wait times in Canada. My best friend's husband had back surgery last month with a 3-day wait time.
I said brain surgery, 46
weeks.
Oh, well,
then that's different, because we got a lot of other people talking about that too. Within a 3-day wait, while a family friend with cancer waited only 13 weeks for brain surgery. Much of this time was to allow treatment time ahead of surgery to shrink the tumor. Don't fall for the long wait times narrative. No. It's just incredibly false.
Cancer is handled in a different category. Cancer is faster, but a straight brain surgery is 46 weeks in Canada.
Okay, well, apparently not. Because in this case, it was 13 weeks, much of
which
was...
That was for cancer treatment.
No, brain. That's what she said. I'll read it to you again.
Was it brain cancer?
Yeah.
Brain tumor.
13
brain
weeks
tumor.
For brain
oh, I thought
surgery.
I said brain cancer. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, tumor.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, come on. Linda
what
says,
else do you have brain
we're
surgery?
Listening right
say.
Now to civil discourse. They're Teresa and Rich talking policy, not agreeing on the opposite ends of the political spectrum. That's a rarity. Thank you, panel and WAMC. And thank you to Donna, who says, please be aware that those of listening don't hear anyone's comments when you interrupt and talk over each other.
I'm
your passion
my apologies.
For your
sudden.
Well,
no,
it's,
that was my bad.
It's not.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was Rich's bad.
no, it was. I was interrupting.
I think we're all.
I was trying to
that.
Get Rich
not
to
me.
Answer the question. That's
I haven't had a thing to say. Your passion for your subjects is to be commended, but please refrain from this practice. Okay.
I apologize.
All right, here we go. Thank you to Rich and Teresa. What I hear are both from both the narratives. Can Rich give some facts along with his narratives as he tries to explain why Republicans don't answer where the cuts will come from in the Republican health care bill? The Republicans shouldn't be reacting to the American health care bill. That's a narrative as well. They should be fixing what doesn't work using the facts available. And that's love from Judy. Diana says,
I think, by the way, that is actually the criticism among the Republicans that they're running into, is that they're not all they're doing is fixing the existing system.
We have 45 seconds. So one
says, the whole show?
Rich argues that tax cuts will trickle down. It didn't work in Kansas, and even David Brooks has said the evidence isn't there. Where is Rich's evidence? Yeah, when was the last
Brooks,
time trickle
David
down?
David Brooks
worked?
Is now an advocate for me? I don't think so.
Okay, Robert says, Kellyanne Conway, you've got to be... Oh, no, we did that one already. Okay.
All right, we're out of time, my thanks to Alan and to Teresa and Rich... It's great to have you back.
It is.
It's
you're
so
gonna,
good to have
come,
you here.
You're going to come back, aren't
you're
you?
Coming back.
It's good seeing everybody.
You got to come back, Rich.
All right. We will be back with more Roundtable after this.